This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted. This episode is sponsored by The Latte Co. If you follow me on social media, you'll know that I make Milo smoothies all the time, and I'm always putting a powder in them. That powder is created by The Latte Co. It is 100% plant-based. They have a baby latte, which is for 12 months and up, and then a kiddo latte, which is what Milo is using right now, which is for 24 months and up. You can put the powder in just water, you can put it in smoothies, you can even throw it in baking. It's made with organic, whole food ingredients, it contains more calcium than cow's milk, has a huge range of vitamins and minerals, it is gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free, and it is nut-free. I'll just read off some of the ingredients here. So hemp hearts, pea protein powder, grinded flax seeds, beetroot, green cabbage, kale, broccoli, tomato, pumpkin. I mean, it goes on and on. I consider this stuff my secret weapon, and it's so nice to give Milo a smoothie that has this powder in it, and I know that he's getting a bunch of nutrition. The awesome people at The Latte Co. would like to give you guys 10% off and free shipping on your first order with the promo code THEMOMROOM10. You can find the link in the episode notes, or you can simply go to thelatteco.com. I cannot recommend this stuff enough. So remember, it is promo code THEMOMROOM10 for a 10% discount and free shipping. www.thelatteco.com. Today, I'm speaking with Joanna and Lara from Psyched About Kids, which I love that name so much. Joanna reached out to me on Instagram, and so I went to the website, and I loved what you guys were doing and all the topics that you teach parents about and the workshops that you have. I think initially you had asked me to do like an IG live or something, which like down the road, of course we could do that. But I was like, oh, can you guys come on the podcast? Because I love these topics. So yeah, to start, I guess I'll just ask you guys to tell us a little bit about yourselves. So your training and what Psyched About Kids is and why you started it.
I think usually I start here. I have a degree in humanities, but my background is financial services, believe it or not. I spent 12 years with Merrill Lynch and CIBC Wood Gundy, and then moved to Calgary and decided I needed a change. And I started working with this beautiful organization called CUPS and started working in the Child Development Center. At the time, we had two kids, and I met all of these child development specialists that had these amazing strategies that they were implementing. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is like magic. But really, it's all of the tips, tools, and strategies that I wished I had had when my kids were little. So Matt now is 21 and Jack is 16. So all of the strategies are very simple. And I started to apply them at home and thought, this needs to go beyond the school and the specialists. These are really, really applicable to every parent. And so I approached Joe and we started to talk about kind of that Psych 101, all of the basic brain development and early brain science that would be important for parents to know. And then taking that science and doing the knowledge translation and finding practical strategies that would really not make life perfect, because that's not possible and that's not the objective, but just to help to make life a little easier and to do some investigating into which strategies work and come together as a community and figure it out together. Mm-hmm. And over to Joe.
I actually did most of my training in Toronto. So I finished my undergrad in psychology and then my MEd at U of T in developmental psychology. I started in the field of behavioral therapy, and I learned a ton of like proactive behavioral strategies, which is awesome, and I still use them today. But I thought like there's way more to behavior than just what we observe. So then, yeah, I moved to Calgary, started working at CUPS with Lara, and I learned a lot about attachment-based work and early brain science. And then I went back to school and I finished my postgrad fellowship in infant parent mental health in Boston. So that was really, really cool. Like, it was really cool. I am obsessed with like toddlers. I think they're magical. And like, you know, most people think they're annoying little gremlins, but I think they're really freaking cool.
So interesting.
Right? Right? Yeah. So, and we started Psyched About Kids just like Laura was saying, like, it's not just clinicians and doctors and neuroscientists that need to know this information. It's caregivers, it's parents. Like, we need to know this information, right? So yeah. And that's what Psyched About Kids is all about. We're trying to share this information in a way that is like fun and relatable. And yeah, that's why we're here.
And information that's digestible and where you can take little pieces and implement it in your home. I remember one of the first things that I started to notice with Milo, where someone gave me little kind of like tricks or how to interact with him in a better way, was with his language development. And I lucked out. My friend is a speech language pathologist, and we met a few times, and she just gave me little basic things to change. And when I did that, it was like night and day. All of a sudden he started talking and I was like, oh my God, I just had to stop asking him to talk, or I had to say it in this way instead of that way. And the same goes with, you know, like today we're talking about tantrums, little things that you can change. You know, I started giving Milo, for example, choice, like, here, do you want
choices
this?
Within limits?
Or do you want this?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, look at that. Like, he doesn't act like a monster anymore when I just, you know, make him
give
feel
him
like
power.
He's in charge. Yes. Yes. So I love doing like episodes about these things, because someone will listen to it and they'll make one little change and then they're going to be like, wow. So yeah, super informative and helpful. It's not just like, here's all this information and science and stuff. It's like, no, here, like, do this and you're going to see major changes.
There's some really dedicated, really intelligent people that have done all of this research, and it's absolutely useless if we can't take it and then apply it in our everyday lives. And most of the time, it's really logical when you hear the strategy. It's like, oh, well, of course that works. I know my husband and I, we spent the first years of the, you know, the terrible twos just yelling, stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it. Really, the child needs to know what to do, not what not to do. They're already doing what you don't want them to do. So that, for us, I know that was like, that was the magic ticket. That was like, oh, just stop yelling, stop it, and let them know what to do. So their simple strategies are just hard to implement consistently.
And it's funny because as adults, we're wired to react to things in a certain way. Like 9 out of 10 parents would say, stop running in the house, no running in the house. Whereas, you know, we should be flipping it and walking in the house, or just a simple thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. We have to rewire ourselves. Like, even with the simple strategies, like, we have to do it over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And like, that consistency is huge. Parents always ask me, they're like, what's the golden ticket answer for parenting for these tantrums? Right. And I'm like, they're looking for like reward chart that is going to solve all their problems. Mm-hmm. But like, the actual golden ticket answer is self-reflection and consistency. Mm-hmm. Right. And that is freaking hard to,
it is.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It always reminds me of, we have two dogs, and people always say, you know, when you hire a dog trainer, they're training you. They're not training your dog. They're training you how to interact with your dog. Same thing.
My biggest aha moment, now that my kids are big, is that it was all about me. I had to educate myself on how to interact with them and how to get to know them. And so I was the coach and guide. But at the time, you know, 20 years ago, we were always looking at him going, what is wrong with him? Like, there's nothing wrong with you. It's you, lady. There's something wrong. Like, just adjust a little bit. Not that there's something wrong with us, but it's about our own self-reflection, because we have a cerebral cortex and a frontal lobe that's working already. So we're the ones that have to use it to coach and guide them to develop theirs. So anyways, it's all fascinating.
Oh, it is. So the first thing that you put in the outline that you sent me, which I loved this, was hashtag mom guilt. And then you said how judgment of self affects parenting and regulation. So did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this, especially like during the pandemic when social media use has increased, and of course it's increased, like it's our way of maintaining connection, right? But there's a danger to kind of what we view and what we scroll through, and it starts this comparison game. And the comparison game, it can be a positive thing. It can cause, you know, it can give you some motivation. It can help you learn new things, but then it can cross into this fine line where you start having this hashtag mom guilt and you start shaming yourself for comparing yourself to others. So like, you know, Janet from high school, you see her, you know, professional photos of her family and you think, wow, like, look at the relationship that she has with her husband and look at, oh, look at, she's on the floor playing with her kid. Like, wow, like I didn't do that today. I must be a shitty parent. Or like, look at the way she cuts her her kid's sandwiches. And that's when it becomes super detrimental, because when you're giving yourself that negative self-talk and those comments, like, I'm a shitty parent, or I'm not good enough, or I need to do better. That's when we start building this shame, and with shame comes anxiety. And with anxiety, that's when your stress response is activated. And when your stress response is constantly activated, then guess what? We're going to be either a more reactive parent, so we're going to get triggered more easily, or the opposite. We're going to become unresponsive because we're so numb. So we're not going to have the energy or the motivation to play with our child or to respond to them in a way that we want to, right? So that's when it becomes dangerous. And Renee, it's funny because your content is like the remedy to hashtag mom guilt.
Mm, thanks.
Because
that's my slogan.
The remedy to hashtag mom guilt or hashtag mom shame, right? No, but seriously, because we see someone who has this, you know, like this cute little family and this PhD, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, this lady must have all of her shit together. And then you, right? And then you show us your like authentic, real moments. And then they watch your story and they're like, holy shit. Like potty training is stressful for her.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Now I must not be such a shitty parent.
Mm-hmm.
So like those are the accounts that actually, yeah, remedy that mom guilt because they're so real and they normalize real challenging parenting moments.
That's why I try and share stuff like that, because I get so many messages from people just saying, oh my God, like we're going through the exact same thing right now. And even in people's close friend circles, I think there's a lack of people being honest with what's going on. So they might have, you know, be a part of this mom group in real life and everyone's just kind of da da da, like, because you don't want to complain about having kids because then you're worried about people judging you that you don't enjoy being a mom or you regret having kids or something. But no, that's not what it is. It's just hard. Like some things are hard. And yeah, I think a lot of times people assume that they're the only ones that are going through this. And so they kind of like don't talk to other people about it. So yeah, that's why I always like to share struggles, because it's like, look, we can have an amazing day and I will show us playing outside and Milo's so happy and laughing and we get McDonald's for lunch. But then at nighttime, it can be a complete disaster. And that's just what it is.
Yeah. If you are finding that you're scrolling through and anything that brings you those thoughts, like if you can write out your self-talk and it sounds like a hate letter that you're writing to like the girl in high school that stole the boy that you liked. Like if those are the things that are, you know, like you suck and you're a shitty person and you should do better. If that's what your internal dialogue sounds like, then something needs to change, right? So, and whether it's like who you're talking to or who you're following, or, and then just that self-reflection piece, right? Like this conversation, if there are listeners out there that are resonating with this and are starting to reflect on their own self-talk, like that itself is going to change how they view themselves, and that's going to change their stress response, and that's going to change how they parent, and it's going to be this domino effect. Just one little thing, one little video, that like something that, you know, someone watching your TikToks can completely change their perspective on themselves. And when their perspective on themselves change, that's going to change, like it's going to spiral into all of their relationships in a positive way.
And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of The Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with not a stuffed nose, but like I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth, is itchy in the mornings, and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home, but for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy, and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein, I'm looking at sugar content, and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. First of all, I think we all have different priorities. So I follow people on Instagram, for example, that I love, like they're awesome, but their thing is food. Like she's a nutritionist, she's vegan. And so her content, while she shares very real stuff as well, but she knows that, you know, she sprinkles this on all her kids' food because it contains all these nutrients and stuff. And I always try and tell people, don't feel bad because you don't do that. Feel inspired by someone else's, you know, what they're doing. That's her priority. Food is not my priority at all. My priority, I would say, is like having fun with Milo, making him laugh, you know, doing things like that. So maybe people look at some of my content and think like, oh, that's fun. Like
you know, I'm going to play 90s music today and we're going to dance in the kitchen. You know, if we just take little pieces from people whose priorities are different than ours, then it's like, okay, I'm going to try and make these healthy muffins today and I'm going to feel good about it. But tomorrow we're going to get McDonald's because food is not my thing, but I appreciate that it's someone else's thing and that they do it well. And I'm going to take ideas from them and vice versa.
The people that we want to learn from are the really authentic ones that actually show. So it's not the really prescriptive, like you need to do this. They're people like you who show realness and authenticity. And that makes me want to learn from you.
Food might not be your thing, but when you videotaped yourself, we don't say that anymore these days. That's how old I am. But sorry, I'm stuck there.
When you took out the camcorder.
That's right. So Joe keeps me young. But when you're taking sugar out of the sugar bag and then you said, I might make a mistake when I make these. And you, like, you were just being real and you were saying, I'm going to give this a try. That food might not be your thing, but I made cookies, legit. I made cookies the next day. Food is not my thing, but I was like, it's okay if I make a mistake and they're not perfect cookies. That authenticity is very cool.
Yeah.
And it's okay to make mistakes.
People online who are like that, I think also you can trust them more, right?
Yes. Authenticity builds trust. Trust is where who we want to learn from, right?
Those are all of the really important pieces to parenting too. It's building trusting relationships. It's making mistakes. We learn from mistakes. It's admitting that we've made a mistake. It's apologizing when we've made a mistake. So all of those are really key components to a healthy family and healthy kids that become healthy adults that value those same things. So it's right in line with our philosophies too. And what we know to be true, that's a scientific evidence as well, that's how you build a healthy brain and a healthy person, is that you infuse those values into the parenting.
Yeah. And it's okay to acknowledge that you don't know what you're doing or you're not doing something. The thing that I found interesting with potty training, so many people reached out to me and were like, what method are you using? Tell me exactly what you're doing. And I was like, well, like, we're following, for the most part, like the outline in the oh crap potty training.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's also times where we're not following it at all. And we're just kind of doing what we think is best in that situation. And, you know, we tend to prompt him more than what she recommends. And, you know, like, it's just a bunch of stuff that we're putting together and just trying our best. It's, we've never been parents to follow something strictly or, you know, do anything by the book.
Oh gosh, you're constantly changing and revising and being creative. Parenting is like what a job, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's funny when like the older generation, like our parents will be like, oh, don't worry, honey. Like, parenting is instinctive. He'll just get it. And like, you know, keeping your kid alive is maybe instinctive, mm-hmm. but all these other things, like, we've got to be constantly like creative and we problem solving all the time. And like, it's not necessarily instinctive. Like, you're trying all these methods out all the time.
Yeah. Something my mom never had to deal with was like information overload, you know, they didn't have social media. They didn't have the internet. Like, what?
I know, right?
What did you do? Go to the library and look up like how to deal with tantrums? No, they just did whatever, you know? So it's totally different now where people are just getting bombarded with this method and do this and do this and do this. So I think that's another big stressor on parents, is that there's so much information. And that's why people are like, you know, just tell me what to do. Whereas, and like, that's why I like these little things that I've been learning, like, over the course of the last couple of years, you know, how to interact with them, just simple things. And it's easy to implement in your house, and it's not confusing. It makes sense.
The positive side to that though, is that if you do want to make a change, because if, let's say you say, okay, I want to stop yelling. What am I going to replace that behavior with? If I don't have any examples of what I could possibly do, how am I going to stop yelling? So those strategies are all out there. So the flip side to that is that if we purposefully want to make change and to do something different than our parents did, or, you know, we see that we want to, I don't know, be kinder to our spouse, or like, what approach would you use? If you want to stop doing something, you have to have something to replace it with. So there's all kinds of examples of things to replace it with. Just like you said, you have to find what resonates with you and what works, and be open to trying, because mm-hmm. yeah, it's an iterative process. Change, you have to, it's trial and error. What is going to work and what feels good for me and my family?
Yeah, exactly. A topic that I love is emotional regulation. So you guys talk about the not so boring science behind emotional regulation. And so what do you guys mean by that?
Usually when we hear like brain science, we just think of like all these diagrams and like, okay, cool. Like this part of the brain is being activated. What the heck does that mean? Okay. I don't know if you know Dan Siegel's hand model.
I've heard of his name, but I don't know what.
Okay. So he's the author of The Whole Brain Child and No Drama Discipline. Like he's, if you haven't read his stuff, I highly recommend it. He really gives like a really easy to understand explanation of like what is going on when your kid has a tantrum. So basically, like for all of you guys who are listening, if you tap your forehead, that is your prefrontal cortex. It's the last part of your brain to develop. Do you know how old you are when this part of your brain develops?
18.
They're saying 25 to 30 now.
Oh my. Mine just developed 5 years ago.
Isn't that crazy?
I believe it though.
Yeah. So that's what research is saying, is that the prefrontal cortex doesn't develop until like your late 20s now. And so doesn't that say a lot about our teenagers? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So our prefrontal cortex. So again, if you're tapping your forehead, that's kind of where it is. It deals with executive function skills. So basically like all the skills that make you a successful adult. So planning ahead, organizing things, looking at consequences, managing your impulses, like self-regulation, all of that is developed in like your late 20s, wow. Like fully developed. So now that we know this, like it puts things into perspective, because we constantly have to be our kids' prefrontal cortex, like our kids' thinking brain, right? Which is exhausting.
Yeah.
but that's like, they don't have a fully developed prefrontal cortex, and we're constantly building it. Like kids' brains are insane. So between the ages of 0 to 6, especially, so the back of your brain, so if you tap the back of your brain, that's where your limbic system or amygdala is. And we call this the feelings brain, or this is where your stress response is, right? So when your stress response is activated, you go into like that flight or freeze. Oh my God. Fight, flight or freeze. And essentially, like when that stress response is activated for our little ones, they are in tantrum mode. That's when we see tantrum, right? So what happens to us when we hear a tantrum? Often our stress response gets activated, right? So Dr. Dan Siegel, he calls it like two flipped lids. Like this is your prefrontal cortex on the, like your knuckles. If you put them down over your thumb, that's your thinking brain, right? And if your stress response activates, this is your stress response, like you can't use your thinking brain. You can't use your problem solving and planning and organizing skills, right? So then, okay, so here's your child, their lid is flipped because they're having a tantrum. And then you get triggered when they're screaming over something probably really stupid to us. So then our stress response gets activated, and then boom, there are two activated stress responses, two flipped lids. And what happens when there are two flipped lids? Chaos. Like you're literally adding fuel to the fire, right? So then, so this is where the brain science comes in, and it takes a long time for parents to figure out, you know, we need to regulate ourselves before we can actually go and help our child, right? So, and we didn't learn emotional regulation growing up. Like, what the heck is emotional regulation? We didn't learn these skills in school. Like, now
we didn't even talk about our feelings.
Yeah, we didn't. It was taboo to like be like, I'm feeling angry right now, to say that out loud, right? So
we still struggle with our own emotional regulation as adults because we didn't learn, we didn't have the foundation that like luckily schools are starting to implement curriculums on emotional regulation right now, which is really cool. But anyways, we have to regulate our own emotions. So put our lid back on. And that might mean we shut ourselves in the bathroom for 30 seconds and do like the silent scream, like, ah, you know, and then come back out. And you're like, okay. My thinking brain is back on. Now I can approach the situation and I can help my child put their lid back on. And the way we're going to do that is through co-regulation. So you literally have to model what calm looks like before we can reason or redirect or problem solve with our kid. We need to show them what calm looks like. So you're sitting there on the ground with them. And it sometimes it feels really weird because you want it to stop right away. You want the tantrum. This is the biggest problem is everyone has a fear of the tantrum. You want it to stop right away. Do not fear the tantrum. It's a developmentally appropriate response. Okay. So you're triggered, but you're calming yourself down. You're sitting there and you're breathing. And you can throw in a little bit of communication in there, but not too many words because, again, they're not registering, right? So you're saying, like, I love you. I know you're really mad right now that we have to clean up. I'm going to wait until we're calm and then we can solve the problem. And you literally wait it out. And I don't know if you've seen this video. His name is Joel Mitchell. Joel Mitchell. I mean, he's a really hot dad.
Let me write this down.
Okay. But there's this video that went viral of this dad. And he is showing, like, it's the epitome of self-regulation. Like, this, his toddler is throwing this insane tantrum and just, like, it could be like a sensory meltdown too. Like, just hitting the wall and screaming. And this dad is just sitting right next to this child. And like, he's present and is showing, he's really showing this little girl what calm looks like. And it takes a few minutes before the little one starts to regulate herself, but then goes in for the connection. Like you're here, you're present, and goes in for a hug. And it's so, so powerful. It like makes me cry all the time. So Joel Mitchell. Like,
yeah, I'll look it up.
Yeah, it's so good.
I'll tag you in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll tag you in it. It's so powerful. But to be able to get to the point where you can do that consistently,
it's
again,
a lot of self-reflection.
Oh, a lot of self-reflection. And it's, again, rewiring that, like, your own brain, right?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be perfect all the time. I mean, we're human, right? Like, we're going to get reactive.
I find I get more reactive not during tantrums, because during tantrums, I just like shut down. I try to be as calm as possible to like counteract his level of tantrumness. So yeah. And I will just sit there, rub his back. And I think if parents are not used to doing that, it will probably take a few times. And then once they realize the benefit of doing that, and I also put myself in his shoes. When he is pissed because we have to take his PJs off when he gets up, I'm like, you know what? When I get out of bed, I put on sweater and sweatpants like to get ready to go because I get out of bed and it's cold. So imagine I'm taking him out of bed now and I'm asking him to take his PJs off so that we can get him dressed to go to school. And yeah, of course he doesn't like that. Like it's cold. He just woke up from his cozy bed and now I'm stripping him of his pajamas. And so I always think about like put myself in his shoes, and it sucks. It does suck for even adults. Like he can't rationalize why we're doing
the
that.
Thinking brain.
And yeah, he doesn't have this, you know? So yeah, those are things in a tantrum, but I find I'm more reactive if he's just being a little shit, for lack of a better word. You know, he's not in tantrum mode, but I'm trying to put his PJs on or something, and he's like not doing stuff. And I'm like,
not cooperating, right? Like you're trying to set this limit with them, and they're like, now they're, you know, they're, when they hit that age, when they can say like, no, I don't want to do that. They can express themselves. Like, what the heck? what do you mean you won't express yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't throw your toys. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, grabs a toy. And yeah, one time
oh,
I was.
Makes eye contact. Like, yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And oh, then yeah. He's just like.
Okay. And I'm like, okay. I'll throw my toy. Okay.
Yeah. So true.
That's so true. Those are managing our own triggers. So that's yes. We're trying to teach them to manage their triggers. And
exactly.
Yeah. My husband and I had zero reflection around that. We parented strictly out of reaction and impulse. There was no purpose to it. And so we've come such a long way.
And so I'm curious, how do you implement certain things with older children?
It's amazing that it's exactly the same strategy. You just age up. So these strategies, if you start them when they're little, everything we've talked about, acknowledging feelings, being open when you've made a mistake, establishing trusting relationships, these are going to pay it forward immensely when they're teenagers because they've already practiced that. It's already something that's established in your relationship. So that saves you in those teenage years when they're out making their own choices that potentially are dangerous, that, you know, those values that you had an opportunity to instill when they're little, that's when it really pays off. So it's not like it's a quick fix when they're 2 and 3 and 4 and it's going to magically repair everything. You're just setting that foundation so that you can rely on it later on. And then they go off and my 21-year-old lives in Ottawa now. He's doing his thing and he's good. He reaches out to us when he needs it, but it's really setting them up for success, like 20 years later. So it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
And isn't it interesting how all these things can be applied in romantic relationships as well?
Yeah.
100 million percent.
Yeah. We get that a lot is oftentimes, I hate to say it, it's the mom that's at the parenting group and they'll ask, so how do I get my husband to actually implement or try or be open to trying new things also? So that's really hard because both parties have to be open to be curious and you have to have that learning and supportive environment at home to, I know when I first started bringing some of those strategies home, you know, my husband's like, well, no, our parenting is fine. You're yelling at a 6-year-old. I don't think that might not be fine. I don't know.
It's funny because I'm the one, obviously, because I'm so interested in this stuff and I kind of have like my background is in psychology, but more so in adults and different things, but it's very applicable to parenting as well. It all kind of meshes and romantic relationships, but I'm the one that seeks out all this information. And then I bring it to my husband, which like he will just listen to what I say. But sometimes he's like, what? Like the other day he said, if you don't do this, you like, we're not going to do this. And I was like, you can't say if. You can't say if, don't use it. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'll explain later. Just don't say if.
Just don't do it. I remember I was sitting at the CDC, at the Child Development Center, I was at my desk and I was on the phone with Matt. He was babysitting Jack. I don't know what we were thinking. I think he was probably 12. Jack was little. And I was on the phone with him and he said, well, Jack's not listening to me. And I told him, well, if you can't figure it out, you're going to have to go to Trico, which was where he didn't want to go because it was the like older kid daycare.
Okay.
And Sabina walks behind me and she goes, that's a threat, Laura. I was like, what are you talking about? I threaten my kids all the time.
Yeah.
If you don't stop doing that, I'm going to take away your computer. Why else do we give them technology, right?
Yeah.
The best was when Jack threatened you, like when he didn't like something that you did and he threatened to throw your purse out the window.
Yeah. Oh my
God. Like, Mom, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to throw your purse out the window. And I thought, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. And then I thought, wait a minute. Yeah. I just did that to you like 100 times.
That is so funny. Yeah, they do everything that we do. And I noticed that the other day it was yesterday, I went pee because I picked him up early from daycare. So I'm going pee and he's right beside me, like with his hands on my lap like this. And he's like, good job, mommy.
Oh,
you did
so
it.
Cute.
You did it, mommy. High five, mommy. And I'm like, thank you.
Oh, so cute.
Like the cutest thing ever.
Oh my goodness. That's adorable.
I know. He's so cute.
Oh my gosh. Oh, aren't they so precious?
This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transition-to-table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched. Your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddo's mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order.
Did we talk about parental empathy?
You started to.
I just kind of brought it up. Yeah, I love the topic of empathy so much.
Me too.
I think about it a lot in terms of mom reaching out to mom or like the mom community, because I feel like nobody has empathy for anybody else. And that's where you get like all the judgment, the shame, and the mom shaming, yeah, and the comments and all that stuff. But yeah, with regard to parental empathy, I'm assuming that means like you having empathy for your child, kind of like taking your PJs off in the morning.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's funny though, because people, when they hear the word empathy, they're like, oh, like, you know, I have empathy because like I cry during sad movies, right? Like, so so I'm good, right? And I'm like, oh, like empathy's freaking hard. Like, it's easy to have empathy when you see someone who's like really sad or like has hurt, mm-hmm, right? Like, it's so easy to have empathy for someone and you want, oh my gosh, they're hurt. I feel their pain. I want to help them. I want to support them. You know what? It's freaking hard to have empathy for someone.
Tell me. I didn't know I was getting quizzed.
When they're angry with you, it's so hard to have empathy for that person and for our little one, especially when they're screaming at you saying I hate you. You're a stupid mommy.
Yeah.
You're like, what empathy? Like, you little shit.
Yeah.
I want to punch you in the mouth, but I'm not going to, right? So, but like you said, like it's one of those things where, and we haven't been, you know, we haven't been a toddler or a child in like decades. So it's kind of hard to put ourselves in, you know, our kids' shoes. It's one of those things where, like, if it's not important to us, like it's not a big deal to us.
Yeah.
You just kind of undermine it and invalidate it. And you're like, oh my God, like just put away your Paw Patrol tower. Like, what the heck? It's not a big deal, but in their little world,
it is
like,
their world.
It is their, like, it is a freaking big deal. And there's this mom in one of our workshops who, what did she say? She said, you know, it's really funny. Like when we go into a Starbucks and we get the wrong coffee order, we are like outraged. We're like, this isn't it. Like I waited in line and you didn't even give me the right order. Like, what the hell? And then when our kid is upset over like the wrong color plate, it's outrageous. Like, mm-hmm, oh my God, relax.
Yeah. So actually we can remember when we were three, because in those moments when we're just getting triggered and we can't cope anymore, that's our three-year-old self. Like that's us in our emotional brain, not being able to cope. So I always think of all of the work that we do in our work environment to work on our mission and our vision and the environment and treating each other with so much respect. And if we brought our home selves into our workplace and treated each other that way in our workplace, like I think we'd be fired in 3 seconds. So yeah. It's just,
It's hard.
With regard to empathy, Milo went through this stage where he's obsessed with Toy Story. And so he would get Toy Story. It was like stuffed animals or little rattles, but they were soft. They were plush toys. Obsessed with them, brought them everywhere. But then we ran into issues because he wanted to bring them in the bathtub with him. Like he would not let go of them. But then he also wanted to sleep with them after. So like we were in a, you know, a pickle. And I felt so heartbroken for him on those days where we had to take them away. So, and like he wasn't allowed to bring them in the tub. And we had a few nights where he didn't even have a bath because it was just like meltdown. And we tried everything. Like people are like, oh, make them a little bed and walk him over and let him put them away. Like I tried everything.
You could have had bathtub ones and bedtime ones.
Yeah. Well, we have boxes of Toy Story toys, like boxes now, because we were like, okay, clearly we need multiple of everything.
400.
Yeah.
Rattles. Yeah.
Yeah. And luckily he's out of that phase. I think he understands that certain things can't go in the bathtub, but I remember thinking, obviously his reaction is huge, like huge, major meltdowns over a toy. And sometimes my husband would be like, oh my God, like, are you serious? And I'm like, think about it. Like, this is his best friend. Like, what if someone just came and ripped our dog away from you? Mm-hmm. Like, you would be mm-hmm. so upset. Like, this is his world. And we're telling yeah. him, like, it was so heartbreaking.
Oh.
So yeah, that's kind of like the empathy, right? I think.
Yeah, 100%.
Adults are so quick to be like, oh my God, like relax. Like, it's just this, it's silly. And almost blaming the child for reacting in a certain way, but it's like, that's their life.
Yeah.
Right there.
And you can have empathy and you can be super nurturing and validating, but still set limits. Mm. So like you did, right? Like, no, we can't bring your toy into the bathtub. I know you're so sad about that. You love your toy. This is really hard, but you're still following through with that limit, right? So that's another thing is like people think that when we start acknowledging emotions, it's all like hippy dippy, like you know, rainbows,
all, and, yeah, jellyfish,
yeah, like oh, like no, you can still be nurturing and empathetic and still set limits and follow through, okay? And that validation is gonna it really de-escalates them. It mm-hmm. it helps.
It diffuses the situation.
Maybe not fully. Of course, they're still going to be upset. But if you're dismissive and invalidating and you're like, oh my God, Milo, what the hell? Like, it's just like, you'll be out in 10 minutes. Like, he's in your bed. We made a little bed for him. Like, whatever. Hello.
Yeah.
Like, that response is going to completely escalate the situation. Whereas the, oh man, I know this is hard for you, bud. Like,
and all of this coaching and guiding, it seems like stages or issues go on forever. And when is this going to stop? But those are opportunities to coach, to guide, to build capacity in that little one so that, you know, later on they can cope. Because there's no one that's wearing diapers in high school unless they have a medical issue. Like everybody gets through the potty training. No one's bringing their plushy little play toys into the tub when they're, you know, 15. It's just, mm-hmm. these are teachable moments, times where you can reinforce your family values and your expectations. And if we can do that in a calm, purposeful way, then even better. It's not about perfection. It's just about trying.
Yeah. And I think looking at their behavior with empathy, like through an empathetic lens or something, it also helps you with your reaction and your behavior because you're less likely to, you know, react loudly or aggressively or whatever because you're thinking about how they must feel and why they're behaving that way. Like, think about why is this happening?
There's always a why.
Like, Buzz Lightyear is his favorite toy. Oh my God, the other day he broke Buzz Lightyear's. We have like the electronic talking one. And he's so rough with him. And the other day his wing broke, like his little wing that comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was ready, like my heart, I was like, oh my God, he's gonna freak out. Like, we don't have another one of these. But I like talked him through it and I was just like, Yeah, his wing broke. I think because you threw him on the ground, he hit his wing and now that wing is broken. And maybe we can fix it. Like maybe we can fix it. And I was expecting him to lose his mind and he didn't. He was just like, daddy, 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 like come see, like wing broken, wing broken. Aww. And I was like, oh, thank God. So scared. Yeah. This, I'm like, oh my God, Disney is closed. It's a pandemic.
Amazon won't be able to deliver one for 2 days. What are we going to do?
Oh God. My husband instantly was like, we need to get another one of those. I was like, yeah. Okay. So we don't have too much time left, but I thought we could go through, and just so everyone knows, you have a workshop that's called Taming a Tantrum. So these are all things I'm assuming that you teach in that workshop, but we'll go over the ABCs a little bit quickly. We might have already touched on some of these things already, but yeah. So take us through the ABCs of taming a tantrum.
A stands for anticipate and be proactive. And when caregivers come to me for advice, they're always like, what do I do when my kid is tantruming? Like in the moment, right? And I'm like, hold on. What do you do proactively to prevent the tantrums or to reduce the likelihood of them happening? And they're like, what? What do you mean? So those proactive strategies, like the A in the ABCs, like that is what we focus on. And I'm talking about like, can they identify emotions?
So talk about feelings.
Talk about feelings.
Identify them.
Can they? Yeah. Like we have like little feelings cards and it's amazing how like you bring this visual when they're like upset and you show that like you can, you mirror, it's like mirroring their emotion. They're like mad. And then they all of a sudden know what to do. Like they go in for a hug or something. And so just talking about emotions and like calming strategies when they're calm, not in the, you can't teach them. Again, we know now, we know that science is telling us you can't teach them how to breathe in the middle of the tantrum. Hold on. So just count, hold up your finger and blow and do this. Like, no, like you can't do that in the middle of the tantrum. So teaching these skills in advance is a proactive strategy. Setting up family rules and values in advance. Does your partner know what the, like the rules of the house are? Do you know, would you be able to write them out? Like, would your partner have the same rules? Would your kid know the house rules? Because if you keep going, especially if you have a visual, like you keep going back to like the same, oh, remember rule number two, we keep our feet on the ground. Oh, awesome. So just referring back to that is a proactive strategy. Giving transitional warnings. Transitions are freaking like,
that's where most of the meltdown,
right? That's where a lot, like going from like something they really like to do, like a high preferred activity to a low preferred activity, boom, tantrum. Like if you're like, okay, time to clean up now, time to sit at the table.
Right now, this second.
Right now.
The second.
Right now.
Stop doing it.
Like, what? What?
Yeah.
And then, boom, anxiety. Like, what do you mean? What's happening next? What are we eating? And then, boom, tantrum. Right? So, it's funny because, like, I like to give this example. It's like you and your best friend are, like, pre-pandemic, hanging out on the beach. And you're drinking, like, your favorite wine. And all of a sudden, your friend just out of nowhere is like, okay, I'm done. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And you're like, but as adults, we have the thinking brain to be like, oh, like, are you okay? Like, where do you want to go? Like we have the actual capacity to do that, but our kids don't. So simply giving them like a warning, like 5 minutes left to play. And then when the timer goes off, playtime's all done. Like that signal starts to prepare them for the transition and the visual, like visuals are awesome. Like they can totally help. So having like a first then board, like first we're going to play and then we're going to clean up. What's this? Clean up. And they're like, oh yeah, I hate doing that, but I'm prepared to do it now. Yeah. I'm not going to have that anxiety and that outburst.
And I think it's important, all these things, because I've thought these things as well, but sometimes I'm like, I don't think he understands. Like, but I've been training myself to do it regardless of whether he totally understands, because again, I'm training myself to interact with him in a certain way. So even if you're not sure that your kid is going to totally understand, start doing these things and eventually they will.
That's a great point. They develop so quickly. Yeah.
Like it just change happens so fast.
And then you get used to it.
Stage ahead of time. Exactly.
And then you have like that beautiful moment where like, you know, they get upset over something and then they go and like, they find their feelings book and they're like, Mama, I'm mad. And you're like, what the heck? Like, mm-hmm. you just communicated that with me? Okay. What should we do? Like, oh my gosh, like this has been working. Like, or like they sit there and they start to breathe and they're like, and you're like, oh my God, like I've been doing this for 3 months and I didn't think it was working, but it finally clicked. Like they finally connected with it. And like, that is the most rewarding. Like those moments are so rewarding when you actually mm-hmm. see them implementing the skills themselves.
And they need those as they, you know, they're going to go off to school and they're going to be by themselves, not by themselves, but they'll be, you know, in their classroom. And these are skills that you want them to have independent of you. So teaching all of that in advance, it takes mm-hmm. time and effort and focus, but spending time on it will pay off.
I think traditionally we spend so much time with physical tasks, teaching them like going to the potty, tying your shoes. And like you said, all of a sudden it'll just click and they'll start doing these things on their own. But we need to spend time doing the emotional stuff as well, you know?
Yes, it is. It's the most important piece. And that's the piece that developed first, that emotional brain. So the opportunity is there when they're little and it's the most challenging time for them emotionally and for us too as parents emotionally. But yeah, it certainly pays off down the road to establish that at the very beginning.
So B is being the teacher.
Yeah, be the teacher and
coach, guide, model.
Yeah, and find the replacement behavior here. So this is where Lara was saying like, this was like a pivotal strategy for you.
Oh, huge.
Because it's constantly like, when our kids are like acting out or misbehaving or showing challenging behaviors, our go-to is the reprimand. No, stop, don't. Right?
Stop hitting your brother, go stand over there. Like what, that's... It's not helpful.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like they need to know what to do and you need to actually go in there and show them. And it's amazing how quickly they can be redirected. And you know, I used to do this all the time, but it's with it, you use this strategy with language as well, because when their stress response is activated, they don't have the words. We know that they know the words, but they don't have the words in that moment. So giving them the word, like, you know, have you heard that saying, like, use your words? I used to use it all the time. Use your words when they're screaming because they want something. Simply giving them the word, saying like, milk, please. All of a sudden they look at you and they're like, milk, please. And you're like, that's what I want you to say. Like literally just giving them the language or showing them the skill, like, or I hear people like when I worked at the Child Development Center, mm-hmm. just screaming across like the room, like, you need to share, you need to share. and a three-year-old has no idea what the fuck sharing is.
Yeah.
You literally need to go in and show them
what
sharing is.
And most of the time the parents talking about turn taking and that.
Yeah. And turn taking is different than sharing. That's another thing. Sharing is like when you can actually like rip something in like Play-Doh, you can share Play-Doh or you can share multiples of things. But if it's one item, what the heck does share mean? I'm not going to care. Rip Buzz Lightyear in half. You take turns with Buzz Lightyear. So you set that turn taking alarm, you know, timer, beep, beep. Oh, now it's your turn. Oh, Dad's taking turns. So you literally have to go in there and like model it and show them the behavior that you, so if they're hitting you, so like, let's say they're hitting.
Yeah.
And the function of that, like there's always a function. So let's say they're hitting to get your attention, right? Like they're like, what's the replacement for that?
What's the thing? It's not
gentle hands. Everyone says gentle hands is the replacement, which it's not.
You know, people say it's like attention seeking, but
connection seeking.
Love that. Yeah. So if Milo does things like that to me, I usually am just like, oh, okay. And I'll get on the floor with him and start doing something.
Well, that, I mean, good for you, but a lot of parents will be like, don't hit me. Stop hitting me. What is he trying to communicate? He's trying to get your attention.
Yeah.
So how do we replace that? We model tap, tap with a finger. Excuse me.
Yes.
And then if he'd said, okay, tap, tap, excuse me. Now you have my attention. So we replaced that hitting.
Replace it and then acknowledge it when you see it.
And automatically, now, wow, that's exactly what I want you to do to get my attention. Tap, tap, excuse me. So that's be the teacher. It's so hard to come up with replacement behaviors in the moment. Like, again, our go-to is the reprimand. So we have to retrain ourselves. So A is all of the proactive strategies. Anticipate, be proactive. B is be the teacher and find that replacement behavior.
And that's the capacity building when they're calm. Mm-hmm. Those are the strategies that are going to change too as they age up. The strategies age up. Same strategy, just with an older.
I feel like for me, because this is the kind of person that I am, I would make a list of here's some problematic behaviors that Milo's been doing. Here's what the replacement is going to be or what we're going to do instead. And then study that and practice. And then it'll just become second nature.
Yes, that's exactly what you have to do. And share that with your partner so that he also, replaces that behavior in the same way, right? Yeah. So that's be the teacher. And then C is calm together. And we talked about this already.
Yeah.
So that's when they're in full-blown tantrum mode. We need to be able, in order to solve any type of problem or to fix anything or to repair anything, we need to regulate first with them.
I think adults struggle with that themselves. Because I think about myself, my initial reaction to Milo having a tantrum or a meltdown is I feel bad for him. Like he's really struggling, and you just want to help them. But I feel like a lot of adults would not have that reaction and would be more so like,
it's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Especially when you're stressed, you're on your last nerve, you're tired, you're done.
Yeah.
Not on the same page as your partner. Like there's so many other things that creep in. So doing that consistently is really hard.
Yeah. And the waiting it out again, the waiting it out is so hard. You just want it to stop immediately. But stopping that emotion right away is it's almost like perpetuating that, no, don't express your feeling. So they're allowed to be mad. And again, you can set limits around, you're allowed to be mad, but we're not hitting, right? So we're going to calm down and you can tell me what you need. So that's the replacement behavior is telling me what you need or whatever it is, right? So it's really hard to wait it out and let them express themselves and let that ride the wave of emotion
and
model the calm. And then as soon as they start to make eye contact with you, as soon as they start to reach out to you, as soon as they start to make little verbalizations, that's when we know that they're de-escalating and that's when we can go in and solve the problem. So what happened there? Can you tell me what, are you hungry? Or this is where we solve the problem. Or we continue and follow through with the limit. Maybe they had a tantrum and they didn't like what happened and their emotion was just too big, right? They don't like the limit and they're frustrated and we ride the wave with them. And then guess what? We follow through with that original limit.
Is hard.
Yeah.
It's important to point out, I think, because people get this information, okay, you're going to do this, like how to deal with a tantrum and so on and so on. And I think people assume that these people are saying, if I do this, everything's just going to be totally perfect. Like implementing these things is not going to look perfect. And it's not going to be it's like when people give me advice for certain things if he's up at night, go in and just rub his back and they make it sound like if you just go in and rub his back he's just gonna fall back asleep and this is exactly no, these are strategies and it's not going to be perfect and it's going to take time so that he makes the connection and gets it and it's a process. It's not just do this and everything's going to be perfect, because I think what happens is parents start to implement these little things and it might look maybe it was worse this time, or maybe it didn't work 100%. Right away. And then they're just fuck it. But it's not, it's like potty training. It's not a linear trajectory. It's going to be messy, but it's going up.
It is. Yeah, that's right. And it's funny when caregivers implement a new strategy or a new routine, the toughest days are the first three.
Mm.
And when parents give up on the strategy, day two. Oh. So day one, they're really gung ho. This is great. This is exciting. Day two, it's not working. They're done with the strategy and they don't even get past day three. where they see that upward trajectory, right? So like, that's another thing, you guys, if you're listening and you're trying to implement some of these new strategies, give yourself some time, give yourself some grace, expect some big behaviors, especially for the first 3 days. When you're doing that calm together protocol, it's like, if you're used to timeouts and all of a sudden you're like, okay, let's try to calm together first before we solve the problem. And your kid just screams for 37 minutes. You're like, okay, this is stupid. This is not going to work. But your child is like, they haven't connected with what you're trying to do yet. Give yourself some time, give yourself some grace.
It's like with the potty training, I was ready to give up. I was so stressed. All of a sudden it came out of nowhere on day three. He was doing so well. And then day three was not good. And I was like, oh my God, like super stressed and upset about it and frustrated. And then I was like, you know what? I read a certain part back in the potty training book that we have about over prompting and, you know, being like stressed about this and how it's not a linear thing and it's going to be all over the place. And what I was expecting was that every day was going to be better than the last day. And that's not it. Some days are going to be horrible, but then the next day you could have a great day. And it's just kind of this messy, you know, ride. So it's the same thing with, you know, implementing these strategies for tantrums.
And especially with relationships and emotions and life is messy. Relationships, it's never perfect. And it's just about, and the strategies that you implement are not to make life perfect. They're to establish an environment that's nurturing and caring and trusting and supportive of one another. So it's never about having a perfect life, because that doesn't exist. It's about having the skills and the strategies set up so that we can ride out those tough times together. There's always sadness. There's always stress. There's always difficult times, but it's just the way we ride them out together.
Yeah. You're not going to not have tantrums, but you're teaching your child extremely valuable coping skills to like carry throughout their life. They're going to have tantrums.
Life's going to be hard. They're developmentally appropriate at Milo's age, right? Up to age six, like, we are going to see tantrums for sure. Often.
Yeah.
Don't fear the tantrum again.
You should put that on a t-shirt.
I know, right? I love that
one. Don't fear the tantrum.
And parents can wear it out when they go to the grocery store with their child.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, those can be for tantrums. Everyone around them.
Yeah.
That's
so funny. Well, this was such a fun chat. So thank you guys for coming on. I call it my show. My show.
We love your show.
To end, I thought you could tell people where they can find you. So your Instagram, your website, and maybe you can just list off some of the other workshops that you guys have. And also, can you talk about that tantrum toolkit? Because I wanted to order it and it's out of stock and I really want that. That's so cool.
Yeah. Okay. So our website is psychedaboutkids.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. So just add psychedaboutkids. We're on Twitter as well. So our workshops right now, we have taming a tantrum and we're working on our potty training. It's called Terrific Toileting. It's like a really cheesy alliteration. So we're working on getting that one online, and then we run some live workshops as well. So we've got like our brain building workshop, ages and stages of development. So that's mega milestones. And so those are some of our workshops, and you can find them there's a link on our social media page as well to our Taming a Tantrum online workshop and our tantrum toolkit. So it's filled with little visuals. And so just, again, giving parents some of those like tangible tools, like you can actually like take these transition cards with you if you know that like your kid like coming home from the park is a nightmare. Showing them what they're going to do next is going to help them, right? So, and giving them a visual to connect with totally helps. So there's lots of cool visuals in there and some fidgets, and
you guys should put Timbits in there. You should contact Tim Hortons. So for our American listeners, those are donut holes. Everyone's like, what's a Timbit? I'm like, oh. Anyways, thank you guys so much for talking to me. It was super fun.
Thank you. And thank you for your content. Thank you for being there with all those funny little.
Oh, yeah.
They're awesome.
Your TikToks Thanks.
Are the best. Yeah. So cute. Milo with the toothbrush and his toothpaste. That's my one of my faves.
Aww.
He was so mad he just wanted to eat the toothpaste.
Yeah. Teeth brushing.
Struggle.
Well, have a good day, guys.
You too. Okay.
Take
Talk
care.
To you later. Bye.
Bye.